My guest at this time is Robert Spencer. He is the director of Jihad Watch and author of the new book, The History of Jihad, From Muhammad to ISIS. And Robert, thanks very much for being with us.
Great to be here. Thanks, Greg.
Well, when we saw the rise of ISIS a number of years ago, there were a lot of different opinions about how ISIS fits into the historical understanding of Islam. And in modern times, and with a lot of the people in the public square, they said, no, Islam is a fundamentally peaceful religion. It's a religion of peace. This is a great bastardization, essentially, of Islam. You say that's not the case at all. If you go back to the roots of Islam in the 7th century, it's pretty close to what we saw with ISIS. What did you find?
Yeah, that's exactly it. That what I've found is through 14 centuries, without any break, without any let-up, without any reformation, reconsideration, without any period of tolerance, although there are a lot of historical myths about that, Islam has been responsible for conflict between Muslims and non-Muslims for 14 uninterrupted centuries. Wherever there have been Muslims and non-Muslims, Muslims have started conflict. Now, of course, I have to say the obvious thing, that obviously not all Muslims were involved in this and not all of them approved of it. Nonetheless, there have always been, in every century and in every place in the world where there have been Muslims, there have been jihadis who thought that it was one of their responsibilities before Allah to wage war against and subjugate unbelievers. And they've been doing it in an unbroken fashion, in a continuous fashion ever since the time of Muhammad and the beginning of Islam. ISIS was or is still, although it's substantially weakened, a reformist, revivalist kind of movement, and it claims to be the true and pure embodiment of Islam. I show in the book that there are movements like that all through Islamic history. Many of them were responsible for the conquest of Spain and its 700-year occupation by Islamic forces. And many of them have also been responsible for jihad warfare elsewhere. There was nothing new that ISIS did, nothing different. It was exactly the same in its beliefs as jihadis throughout history.
Mr. Spencer, how would you describe the majority of Muslims, as they're described right now, as not being interested in jihadism? Are they considered, according to Muhammad, to be bad Muslims? Has it changed over time so that what Muhammad was espousing is no longer the mainstream? How would you explain the fact that, at least from what we know, the vast majority of Muslims are not engaged in this?
Well, there are a multitude of reasons for that. One of the main ones is that jihad is risky. You can get killed. You can get maimed. You can have all sorts of disasters happen to you. That takes a certain amount of courage. Not everybody is going to do it. Also, there are people who are simply not religious enough to care. They want to take care of their jobs, their lives, their families. They're not interested in going out and waging war against unbelievers. There are also people who are waiting, biding their time, working in other ways. The Muslim Brotherhood and other groups of its kind are working to achieve the same ends as jihad terrorists, which is Islamic law ruling the world, but by different means, through elections, through civilizational change, and so on. The real question here is, what are Muslims who are not jihadis doing to stop the jihadis? And that's where we see virtually nothing being done. I have tracked over the years the activities of Muslims who oppose jihad terror. And a few years back when ISIS was in its heyday, we used to see every now and again Muslims against ISIS rallies. And invariably, they only attracted about 25 to 50 Muslims, whereas rallies against cartoons of Muhammad drew 800,000 people in Chechnya, hundreds of thousands in Pakistan and Iran. And this indicates that while most Muslims are never going to wage jihad, they also don't oppose it in any effective manner.
One of the things I've always been curious about, Mr. Spencer, is from what we're told in the history books, Islam was founded by Muhammad in about 622 A.D. By 732, we're at the Battle of Tours, where Charles the Hammer Martel, if you've taken a few history classes, they beat back the effort of Islamic conquest. So in a little over 100 years, they went from Saudi Arabia all the way pretty much to the Atlantic Ocean. And I'm guessing they didn't get there by knocking on doors and evangelizing. So how do folks who don't believe that that's the root of Islam explain that rapid advance?
Well, I think people actually aren't really aware of this history, and this is one of the reasons why I wrote this book. And you're absolutely right. The Islamic advance was incredibly swift. And not only did they get all the way to the Atlantic and into Spain within 100 years of the death of Muhammad, but they also went in the other direction, conquered one of the great powers of the day, Persia, and went into India. And this is the first book in the English language to deal with the jihad against India, which is an extraordinary and bloody story. And these people were warriors. They were not knocking on doors and evangelizing. And I think a lot of people take for granted the idea that there was some kind of mass conversion to Islam, that people were converting to it because they were convinced that it was true, and that this is what was responsible for the Islamization of the Middle East and North Africa. And that's actually not the case at all. It was all done by conquest. And you hear often nowadays people denying that Islam was spread by the sword, but that is exactly what did happen. Islam was indeed spread by the sword.
President Obama from time to time would point out, or at least assert, that Islamic contributions have been woven into the fabric of America since our founding and possibly even before that. In the history that you've compiled here, what have you discovered about the Muslim influence, if there is any influence, in that era, and what our founders thought about it?
The primary Muslim influence in that era was that this was the first war that the United States fought, the war against the Barbary pirates, and that those they were jihadis, as I show in the book. And Thomas Jefferson and John Adams wrote to Congress a report about how the Moroccan ambassador had explained to them that they were fighting them because it was written in the Quran, and they felt as if they had a divine responsibility to do so. And so jihad was the initial conflicts the United States faced, and this was the beginning of the Marines, and their leathernecks, because they wore leather collars that would prevent them from being beheaded, and the song, you know, with the shores of Tripoli. This was all about them facing the jihadis. But in terms of Obama's claim that Muslims were in the United States and were involved in it since the founding, that's complete historical fiction and has no basis in fact whatsoever.
What's your assessment of how Islam is being dealt with today, particularly by leaders in the West? We have obviously seen what's happening in France and Germany, to some extent in England as well. On the one hand, as we just established, most Muslims don't engage in jihadism, so you don't necessarily want to repress them, but you also want to make sure that you're not creating a breeding ground for this. So what's the smart way to do it, and how do you respond to the way that some of these Western leaders have responded to it?
Well, I think the West in general has had a drastically wrongheaded response to this threat, and that's primarily been characterized by simple denial. They just proclaim that Islam is a religion of peace and leave it at that. I mean, the most notorious example of that, of course, is George W. Bush right after 9/11. And it really actually it hit me with quite a wallop, and I think it will hit the reader as well. The beginning of the last chapter of the book starts with 9/11 and George W. Bush going into the mosque right after 9/11 and saying that Islam is a religion of peace. And after you read in the 14 centuries of war, the unbroken string of conquest and oppression and violence and brutality, for him to stand up and say Islam is a religion of peace seems even more wrongheaded and misguided than it did at the time, I think, when it's seen in the context of the real history of jihad. So the first thing that we need to do is speak honestly about this problem, call upon Muslim groups in the West to renounce the aspects of Islam, including jihad warfare, that are at variance with the constitutional principles of the United States and with, in general, the principles of Western free nations, to renounce the prohibition on the freedom of speech, to renounce the death penalty for apostasy, the oppression of women, the various aspects of Islam that are at variance with Western principles. Otherwise, there's simply going to be conflict. There's just no avoiding it.
Is anyone doing that?
No, nobody's doing that. It's one of the reasons why I'm hoping this book is going to make a difference, because the thing is that everywhere there have been large numbers of Muslims, there has been conflict. Here again, it's not all Muslims or every Muslim, but there are always among the Muslims some who believe they need to wage jihad against unbelievers. Why do we think we're going to be exempt from this and that it's not going to happen to us? It is.
Do you believe that nonviolent Muslims if the more moderate ones speak out, we'll see a more natural end to jihadism, or does it need to be confronted in other ways as well?
Well, I think it both, actually, that we need to see, certainly, Muslims who reject all this being much more energetic in trying to rein in their co-religionists. But we also need to be realistic about the fact that now it's all these years since 9/11, and we have not seen any significant movement among Muslims to oppose terrorists. Muslim groups in the West condemn terror attacks, but actually do virtually nothing to stop them. There's no program in American mosques today to teach young Muslims to reject the understanding of Islam taught by Al-Qaeda and ISIS. And so we need to call upon them to institute those kinds of programs, to make them transparent, honest, and inspectable, and to instill in their people respect for the ideas of the freedom of speech, the freedom of religion, the equality of rights of all people before the law, and other aspects of our principles that are denied in Islamic law.
Mr. Spencer, thank you for your time today. We greatly appreciate it.
Thanks, Greg.
Robert Spencer is director of Jihad Watch and author of the new book, The History of Jihad, From Muhammad to ISIS. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.